Welcome to the Science Allies podcast, a product of the Alliance for Science conversation with our global ecosystem of scientists, communicators, decision makers, and activists, all working to build resilience and better futures for communities around the world. Hello and welcome to the Science Allies podcast. This is the first episode of our podcast and I'm so excited to welcome Dr. Sarah Evangia, who today has just received the 2022 Mary Clutter Leadership in Science Public Service Award. We're here in Portland, Oregon, at the conference, the Plant Biology Conference, with the Association of Plant Biologists. And it's been an amazing week with over 1,000 scientists sharing their work, talking, networking. It's been wonderful. So I just want to invite Sarah to share a little about her journey and to share her vision for the Alliance for Science, because she is the person who held the vision and gave birth to this wonderful organization that I now have the privilege to serve. And we'll end with where she is now at Pairwise, doing once again cutting edge work, which is going to change the shape of things we do, food we eat, and how we understand technology applied to agriculture and food. So Sarah, welcome.
Thank you so much, Sheila. And it is such an honor to be with you. I am so inspired by your leadership, and I am looking forward to watching the Alliance rise to such greatness under your leadership. So thank you so much for inviting me here today.
Thank you. So tell me a little bit about this award that you've received. And this is my first time in this conference. I'm blown away by the amazing people, but you have a long association with ASPB. So perhaps you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a real honor to receive this award, not only because I think Mary Clutter was just an amazing individual and did so much for plant science, but it's great to be here in Portland to receive this award. It was right here in Portland at Reed College, my alma mater, where I did my undergrad just across the river, where I took my first ever plant biology class. And I mean, I tell you, I walked into that class sort of an undecided biology major, but it was there in David Dalton's plant physiology class that I really became fascinated with the power, ingenuity, and the significance of plants. So it's so great to be here in Portland. And of course, you know, ASPB did so much for me as a young graduate student, just trying to sort of break into the world of science communication. In 2005, I was the ASPB-sponsored AAAS Mass Media Fellow. I spent 10 weeks as a journalist at the Raleigh News and Observer, and they continued to sort of support me as a freelancer trying to break into science communication. I wrote for the publications and, you know, published in their journals. So ASPB was really instrumental in my own journey into the world of science communication. So it feels like it's kind of all coming together here. And of course, it was so great to be back at the public outreach event on Saturday with colleagues from the Alliance for Science and colleagues from Pairwise. So it felt really like the merger of many, many worlds coming together.
Yes, we started with the modified food cart, looking at the GMO papaya and apples, and got a great reception. It was a wonderful way to start the conference. So tell us a little bit about how you had that vision to do that, and what was the reception when it first started?
Yeah, well, I mean, eating is believing, isn't it? I mean, we hear these things about GMOs and food, but you know, we often don't realize, you know, what that means. So I think there's been a lot of misinformation mm-hmm. about biotechnology and GM out there in the world. And when people actually get the opportunity to taste a genetically engineered food and hear its story, mm-hmm. You know, their minds are moved, right? So to be able to taste the sweetness and the wonderful flavor of a rainbow papaya freshly flown in from Hawaii, mm-hmm. and to hear the story of, you know, how farmers in Hawaii were being devastated by a disease, and this amazing plant scientist came to the rescue and used the tools of that time in the 90s to develop a papaya that could save the papaya farmers in Hawaii. That's a beautiful story, and it really, you know, helps people understand the importance of having these tools in order to innovate as plant scientists.
Yeah. So where are you seeing? You've been here for the whole of the conference. Where do you see the energy and the dynamism in terms of agri-tech innovations? What were the talks that really stimulated you the most during your time here?
Well, I'll tell you that I'm going to pivot a little bit and say mm-hmm. that what inspired me most about this conference is the young people.
Yeah.
This conference was full of dynamic young people who have been waiting for 2 years to get to engage in person and, you know, show their fire. And wow, what great talks by the next generation of plant scientists. They will not accept the status quo. They will ensure that science is done differently. They want their science to have impact. And they want to ensure that the work that they're doing as plant scientists is going to help change the world. They're going to be developing solutions for climate change. They're going to be developing solutions for food insecurity and nutritional insecurity. These young people are on fire, and they will not accept the status quo. They're going to do things differently, and it's going to be change for the better.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because one of the sessions that blew me away was the hackathon, and it had one of our global fellows, Modesta. She was moderating it. She's very instrumental in the African Researchers Network, and also in ASPB, and also just really engaged and helping other young people, young researchers, young scientists to be part of this the established community. You must have been very proud to see her, to see how she has flourished, because she was from the first cohort, and to see her here supporting another group of young people in their early start of their career.
Isn't that cool? I mean, Modesta's a star. She was a star when I met her. But it is this sort of culture of, you know, you open a door for someone and they walk through it, and then they have access to a door, and then they open it for the next person. Yeah. And yes, you could absolutely see that in action today at that workshop that Modesta led. And we see that across the globe with the Alliance for Science Fellows and the work that they're doing today, you know, from Burkina Faso to Bangladesh, right? We see... We see the network really growing and supporting each other, and that's one of, I think, the most rewarding things about seeing the Alliance for Science, you know, 6-7 years after its birth, as you can really see that kind of multiplier effect in action.
Did you know that the seeds you were planting were good seeds, which is what a good farmer plants good seed? So when you were putting it together and you thought about what are the necessary ingredients to make the Alliance for Science what it is today, did you know? How did you know that it would work?
I mean, I don't think I can take too much credit for that. I think people brought their own ingredients with them, and maybe I just sprinkled a little water on top to get things germinated. So I don't want to take too much credit. But what I will say, one thing I think we did right is we said, it isn't just scientists that should be science communicators. Mm. Everyone can be and should be a science communicator. Mm. And so at the Alliance for Science, when we brought those fellows together over those years, we had priests, we had lawyers, we had journalists, We had farmers. We had people who came from all over the world. Mm-hmm. And everyone had, you know, a story to tell. Everyone had a different community that they could connect in with. And we all kind of brought that together and shared and continue to support each other today. So I think the lesson there is that it is like, yes, scientists should be out there engaging with communities. They should be, you know, doing more science communication. But everybody can mm-hmm. be and should be a science communicator. Mm-hmm.
I think I agree with you, of course. And I do find that most people outside, given some tools, are happy to share. Generally, the reticence is with scientists themselves who find it difficult to unlearn the technical language and use a new language. But what I loved about this conference is that in every of the talks, every of the presentation, you could see an effort has been made to do some outreach, and you could see the scientists being vulnerable, saying, well, I do find this difficult, but I'm trying, and I'm on TikTok, and I'm on Twitter, and I want to do better. And that wasn't like that in my day, and so things are shifting.
Things are changing.
So we are moving the dial. I want to talk a little bit about where you are now in terms of pairwise. I don't want to use my words to describe it, but I saw your presentation in receiving the award, and I was kind of blown away by two things. One, that you talked about food insecurity in America. People never think about America and a lack of food. Instead, we think of abundance and excess. And then you talk about the quality of the food, the lack of nutrition, and how that's a danger to many people in ways that they don't know. So perhaps you can tell us about that and the work you're doing now to overcome that in America.
Yeah, thanks for that, Sheila. Certainly, I mean, in a lot of the work that I've done in the past through the Alliance for Science and other organizations, we talk about food insecurity being something that happens in another part of the world, right? But indeed, you know, we have major food insecurity here in the U.S., made worse by, you know, COVID-19. And it's not just a matter of a lack of calories, right? It's a lack also of nutrient-rich calories, mm-hmm. right? The kinds of food that we actually, our bodies need to thrive. And so this is a major issue in America, so much that it has risen to, you know, the agenda of the Biden-Harris administration. They will be hosting, you know, the first conference in decades, the White House conference on hunger, food, and nutrition. let me edit that out because that's not the right name. The White House conference on hunger, food, and health that will be hosted in September. So this is a pressing issue. I mean, you know, almost half of U.S. deaths are caused by diet-related diseases, and so it's really quite urgent. And so Pairwise is a startup, a food and tech startup that's very much focused on building a healthier world through better fruits and vegetables, and yes, using tools like CRISPR in order to innovate, you know, new fruits and vegetables that'll be convenient, delicious, and desirable for consumers. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to say, hey, you should eat more fruits and vegetables. We need to make them convenient. We need to make sure that they fit people's lifestyles. Mm. And so that's what we're doing at Pairwise. And it fires me up because, you know, it again allows me the opportunity to advance, you know, my goals of ensuring that all people have access to safe, nutritious, healthy, mm-hmm. delicious food.
And will it be affordable, though? Because that's also a big barrier to access.
Affordability is a big barrier to access. And, you know, we're a startup. We're just sort of entering the market. So my hope is that over time, it will mm-hmm. absolutely be available to mm-hmm. all consumers. You know, I'm going to stop there.
Okay, that's fine. I wanted to talk a little bit about your career in terms of you have a very successful career, and when you look at your CV, it seems as if you just steadily climbed up this mountain, and it's
never that direct, is it, Sheila?
Yeah, I know, but it looks like that, and I just want you to address that, because in between the stellar career, you have had 3 children, and you're managing a career, and you are at the cutting edge of the work that you do. So how have you managed to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think when we start out, I mean, I think rarely do we start out in our careers and know exactly where it's going to lead, yeah. Right? So it's always sort of a wandering path. So for example, when I left my PhD, I was very focused on, you know, looking at the barriers to biotechnology across the developing world, right? Mm-hmm. And then I took a job working on this global wheat rust project, mm-hmm. that really didn't have much of a connection to biotechnology, mm-hmm. but offered me a new view into food insecurity globally, especially in the wheat growing regions of the world. But the wheat is globally traded, so it really was impacting everyone around the world. And so, you know, you enter this new world of international agriculture, you know, working with different people in different places, and it turns out that all of that experience working with wheat in those various countries, really building a network. One of the amazing things about working in that wheat rust project was that we built a global network of scientists of all kinds of different disciplines who are all working together toward a common cause. Mm. And I think that that's the way science can be done today. Mm. And I think we've taken some pages from that as we've built the Alliance for Science. Mm. So even though that jump from working in wheat to working with the Alliance might seem like a logical move, it really wasn't. But we took some pages from the wheat work. We decided we're going to build a global movement, a very inclusive global movement, and we're going to solve a big global challenge, misinformation around agriculture, right? And so moving to the Alliance for Science really allowed me also to return to this issue that was so important to me as a PhD student, really ensuring that the tools of plant science, the tools of agricultural innovation would not be lost, that we would be able to embrace those tools to innovate to solve the big challenges. So, you know, we sort of take this random walk and make these different choices, but the pieces eventually all kind of fit together to form a puzzle. Yeah. And then when you look back, you think, oh, well, you know, that path made sense, right?
Yeah.
So for me, this next step of moving to Pairwise is very much a logical next step because, you know, I'm passionate about the role that CRISPR is going to be able to play in helping us feed the growing population, the 10 billion people who are going to be on this planet by 2050, while at the same time reducing agriculture's negative impact on the environment. And so, you know, it really allows me to plug in my embrace for, you know, plant science innovations, plant breeding innovations, with my embrace of food and nutrition for all, and it kind of all comes together in this nice role to be able to advocate for the work that we're doing at Pairwise.
Yeah, I think you said it in your talk, it was expertise plus passion equals purpose. And so I guess that's what I take from what you said, is that you follow this wandering path, but the thing that holds it together is purpose. So when you look back, even if it shifted right, left in terms of how it showed up, the underlying purpose is clear. So you have been very purpose driven in your career, and it shows up in everything that you do. So
I mean, looking at my children every day, you know, reminds me of that purpose. So while it might be tough to balance, you know, being a mom of 3 and being, you know, fully engaged in my work world, they are a constant reminder of why we do what we do.
Yeah. And that's
and that every mother around the world should be able to have the same access to safe, nutritious food that I'm able to allow my children.
Yeah. I wanted to talk a little bit about what we all need in our journey of success, which are not just allies, but mentors, those that have been there, those that have shown us the way, and those that can guide us. I feel, just because of what I've seen in terms of when I joined the Alliance for Science, that Professor Ronnie Kaufman was that kind of a mentor to you, because he, in the little time that I've known him, he's also managed to become an important mentor for me. So perhaps you could talk a little bit about knowing him, his stellar career, and how just being in that sphere of influence helps you to grow.
Absolutely. I mean, Ronnie has been an incredible mentor to me, and, you know, essentially gave me a seat at the table. And he didn't have to do that, right? So I was a young, recent graduate, came in to work with him on the Wheat Project, and he stepped aside on so many occasions and gave me the microphone, gave me the seat at the table. And that's, I think, what mentoring is all about. Yeah. It's all about stepping aside and providing an opportunity for someone else so that they can rise and shine. Yeah. And so I really appreciate that about Ronnie. The other mentor that I'll say really was instrumental in me sort of taking the leap into to science communication and science advocacy was when I was a graduate student. So David Stern, who is the president of BTI today, was instrumental in me sort of having the confidence to make that leap. So at one point in graduate school, pretty far into my PhD, I thought, well, I want to get into science communication and science advocacy. And my assumption was, I guess I have to, stop what I'm doing here if I want to do that. Mm. And so I had a conversation with David, and I said, well, I want to get into science communication. I'm going to leave graduate school. And he said, what? Why are you going to leave graduate school? Like, you're a happy, successful graduate student. Why would you leave? And I said, well, I want to get into this new area of science communication and science advocacy. And all he said was, well, so do it. And I'm like, yeah, do it. Like, that's all I need to do. I just need to do it. I don't need to, like, leave my program. Mm-hmm. I just need to create some new model to do something new. So those, brief but very salient words were really important at that time. And I still remember them today.
Oh, that's great. So as we're coming to the close, perhaps you can tell us two things. One, some kind of a hero or heroine or guiding figure in your life, in your career, some kind of icon that helps you to reflect and learn from in your journey. And perhaps you give us some words for this generation of young science communicators who are still in some ways cutting the long grass. We are just starting really to get people to be interested in knowing more than just the headlines. So a word of advice to the next generation of science communicators.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, the challenges before us are so immense that we've got to be bold. We don't have time for meek solutions to big challenges, so we've got to be bold. We've got to take risks. We've got to be willing to be daring and risky. I think it's really important for young people. Old models are important to learn from, but don't just look at old models to re-envision a new future. We've got to reinvent and create new models. And most importantly, be you. We all need to be true to who we are, because that's when we can make the most impact. Yeah. Choose a profession where you can combine, your expertise with your passion, right? To have impact. That's what we were talking about today. Yeah. Be you, be your authentic self, and make change with that authentic self.
Thank you so much, Sarah. And I'm so happy to have this moment with you that is captured and others can share many of the wonderful conversations that we've been having. Since I've met you, you've been an inspiration in your courage, in your capacity to look at challenges and say, we need to find a solution, but as we find a solution, we also must build capacity. So it's not just about being the cleverest in the room and finding a solution, but does that solution create space for more? So So that's what I saw in you very early on, and I admire it. I'm learning from it. And I thank you so much for sharing this, and we will all still be looking at the next dragons that you're going to slay and the long grass that you're going to cut.
Thank you so much, Sheila, and I look forward to watching you grow the Alliance in new and innovative ways. So thank you so much for engaging in conversation today.
Thank you, everyone. That's the wrap for our first episode. Yay! You've been listening to the Science Allies podcast. If you enjoyed this, or if it sparked any questions, get in touch. You can reach us on any of our social media platforms. And please think about joining one of our communities. Follow the link in our show notes, and you can subscribe to our newsletter and other products. Don't forget to like and share these products too. See you next time.